Welcome to Deeply Disturbing Things,
the podcast.
I'm Macy.
And I'm Naomi.
And we're two anxious counselors who like to talk about deeply disturbing things.
Join us.
Hi.
I'm super happy to be here right now. It took me an hour to drive home.
That's intense. That's why I'm not at your house today.
I know. Normally we'd be in person. Well, there was a lovely snow this afternoon.
Nice light.
But then it stopped snowing and it all got compressed into an ice skating rink. And the whole town is now an ice skating rink.
Yeah, I'm glad you made it back.
I barely used my accelerator to drive home. The natural pull of the transmission was as fast as I was going almost the entire way home.
Does your car do okay in the snow?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love it. And that's why I drive an almost 20-year-old car, because they don't make it anymore. And it's so good in the ice and snow.
I love my Subaru, or my snow cat, I like to call it. They just do better.
Yeah, mine's all-wheel drive too. And it is my Jade Dragon.
See, good cars have good nicknames.
And it'll be even better when I get my new winter tires on.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to get my winter tires on a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I waited for a couple hours, you know, at the Les Schwab's. And finally they came out and said, "So you want us to take your winter tires off and put your summer tires on?" I was like, what? Wait, have I been driving on my super expensive winter tires all summer?
I did that this year and I'm mad about it, but obviously not mad enough to go to Les Schwab before winter.
Well, they're like, well, now you need new winter tires. So
that's why I'm just not going to Les Schwab until I take them off for spring again.
I think
you're
liars. I was having a COVID brain moment. I must have, because I remember taking my winter tires out of the garage. And then apparently I wasn't. I was bringing my summer tires out of the garage
Okay.
and I put them back.
So talking about COVID brain and cars,
I brought my summer tires out and then I probably just put them back and never went and changed them.
Oh,
I thought I did.
Never got it actually done.
Yeah. I thought I did though. Isn't that bizarre?
Okay, so I got a notice like, "Hey, your tabs are expired." And I was like, "What?" And I went and looked and they expired in June. I've been driving around with expired tabs. But it's because during COVID, because I wasn't driving very much, like the first year COVID happened. So I got my tabs renewed like a month before they were due. So I didn't register in my brain that I had to get them a month later again. And so, yeah, I've been driving without tabs.
I think we've been in a weird COVID brain time warp.
Yeah, it feels really weird because normally I'm pretty timely about that, or I think about it more like, oh, I need to do that. And nope.
Yeah, like just today I'm like, oh, when we went into lockdown earlier this year in March. And I'm like, wait, that was last March. That was 2020 March.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, we've been in this a long time.
Somewhere a year went by and I don't know how that happened.
Like, how did that happen?
Both the slowest and the fastest time I've ever experienced at once. Yeah.
Well, cheers to that on that.
Cheers
note.
To that. I forgot. After.
You can't cheers and then not drink.
I know. I'm very bad at social.
Because that seals the deal.
Does it makes it happen, whatever
you have to raise the glass and take a drink, and that means you're in on whatever got said.
Okay, well, I'm definitely in on whatever got said. So
great.
I had like a random thought this week, and I admit this is a weird random thought. What happens to like women or men who have breast implants when they die? Because like their body deteriorates right over time, but then will future, because like I was thinking about the museum I went to when I was in Spain and they had like a little curled up body skeleton from ages ago, and I was like, gosh, that's so violating. But like, are they gonna find bodies like forever in the future and there's just gonna be sacks
two boob
of
bags?
Goo? Yeah, just like sacks of goo water on them. They're going to be trying to like figure out what ritualistic thing these goo sacks had to do with.
I think they'll sink into the skeleton and they'll just be in the middle like a prize.
Oh, it'll just like goop in.
Yeah.
So
and then I have titanium in my wrist, so that'll just be hanging around there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. And that, so I looked it up because that's what I do. And I watched a video of a mortician who was talking about how when they cremate bodies, it actually, like, the bubules melt down into a goo and they just, like, scrape it out of the bottom of the cremation thing at the end. It's not even considered a biohazard. It's not biological.
With bodies that just decompose, how long do they last?
Well, nobody goes in there unless they're, like, way later. Rob grading. Well,
somebody should check it out.
Grave robbing.
Somebody should, because inquiring minds want to know.
Well, apparently the UK now goes around to crematoriums and collects, like you were talking about, your metal in your arm, and they recycle a lot of it now. Hmm. Yeah.
Neat.
Not in the US, I don't think, but there. So anyways, that was my random information lookup.
In Washington State, you can get made into a soil.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, like, in it for a tree to grow out of, right?
Yeah, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a human composting.
Mm.
So you can do that.
I would love for my body to be put into, like, a vegetable garden that my family's forced to eat at, like, a memorial dinner.
Just put it in your fucking will and they'll have to do it.
Eat the tomatoes. Do it.
The Macy tomatoes.
Don't worry, there's no boob sacks in there. You have to chew through. Yeah. So anyways, for all this, you know, we do these check-ins now during the week. I kind of thought I'd have less things to talk about at the beginning, but it seems like we just keep
talking. Still have the chit chat.
Yeah. Well, you get to go first.
Yay.
I know. I figured you'd like that.
I'm going to share with you bloating whales.
Oh, good. Those are a very interesting thing.
Let me put on my glasses, actually.
Okay.
I actually have an eye appointment for the first time in my life.
Ever?
Yeah. Like an eye doctor, like going to the doctor.
Yeah. Like, why are you wearing glasses?
My eyes fixed. These aren't even real glasses. These are, you know, readers from Target. I'm going to go get, like, a actual prescription and actual glasses.
I feel like I have to do that after, because I had the LASIK 3 years ago, but I have an eye floaty now and, oh, shit's getting weird.
Yeah, I'm glad. That's scary. Oh. All right. Back to exploding whales.
Yes. How did we venture so far?
Oh my God, my glasses are, like, not helping me today for some reason. They're making it worse. Okay. So
they're not prescription.
Well, they're, like, dirty as fuck.
I didn't even know that.
What? That these weren't prescription?
Well, like, why you're still squinting whenever you wear your glasses makes sense now.
Well, Stella puts them on a lot, so they have a lot of toddler hand grubbies.
Gooey fingers.
And then I drop them on the floor 20 times a day. You know how it is.
The usual.
On a clear November day in 1970 in Florence, Oregon, so this is a Pacific Northwest story, The state highway engineers lit 20 cases of dynamite so that they could blow up a 45-foot, 8-ton dead sperm whale that had washed up on the beach 3 days before. And the whale had started to rot and it was getting pretty stinky. And they didn't really know what to do with it. You know, rotting flesh smell is not pleasant. And so the hope was that the whale would be disintegrated pretty much by the blast. And then the little bits that remained, the little morsels, would be eaten up by seagulls and fish.
Okay. Morsels.
So Paul Lindman, who was reporting that day for the local TV station KATU, said in his report, it had to be said the Oregon State Highway Department not only had a whale of a problem on its hands, it had a stinking whale of a problem.
Wow. Look at them.
I like this Paul Lindman.
He's great.
He's punny as fuck, witty. So back then, the coast, like all the beach, was managed by the State Highway Division. And so the officials figured that they would tackle this whale problem the same way they tackled any kind of highway problem, like a big boulder on the road or whatnot. They'd blow it up. That's what you do. Something you want to get rid of, you blow it up.
Yes.
And so that was their plan. Unfortunately, things did not go well. The engineers had planned that when they blew up the whale, that the bits would shoot into the ocean, rain down on the water, these little bite-sized, you know, appetizers for the animals to eat. Yes, those nummy, nummy morsels, whale morsels.
Sushi.
All of a sudden, there was this 100-foot geyser of blood, blubber, and sand going up straight into the sky, Larry Bacon said, an on-scene reporter for the local Register Guard. It was like a blubber snowstorm with tiny particles of blubber floating down after the big chunks. And I'll show you a picture of the explosion.
Yes, so you can do.
See that?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a big, like, blast, like huge blast.
Yeah.
So it's sand colored, but do you see how it's also red colored?
Yeah, and I see chunks.
You don't want to see chunks. Yes, exactly. There's chunks.
Never a good sign.
So there's about 75 spectators and reporters that had come out to watch. You know, this is a big show. That's a small local coastal town.
Yeah, and they're getting some big publicity from this too, I'm sure.
And it's going to be like a big kaboom. And yeah. So, you know, families are coming out with like their lawn chairs and they're set up to watch this, kind of like a fireworks show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family friendly event.
Yeah, it's like every parade I've ever been drugged to by my family.
So the engineers, you know, move people back for safety. So everybody's watching from about a quarter mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the blubber, the blood, the sand, this geyser blasted straight up into the sky. And then there was the horrible realization by the onlookers that what goes up must come down. on them.
Yeah. I mean, it's like in hockey, there's certain seats that you might get pegged in the face with the hockey puck. Or, you know, if you go to SeaWorld, you're going to get, if you're in the splash zone, you're going to get
splashed. You're in the splash zone.
So they were in the splash zone for chunks.
In roller derby, we had the crash zone right up next to the track. You could sit there and you might have somebody fall in your lap.
You might have me barrel roll into your face. I've done that before, and into a table as well.
So people at first were like, yay, excited, laughing, woo, when it went off. Woo! And then it was like this pause of silence. And then all of a sudden people start screaming. They start running for their lives. But you can't really run from stinky blubber rain.
No, I mean, no.
One chunk of the airborne blubber was so big it flattened a car a quarter mile away.
Whoa, that's dangerous.
Right. So there were like the bits, the dust, the blubber, blood, sand.
Blubber dust.
But then there was also like some pretty big chunks that were flying around. The worst part, according to Bacon, was the smell. It lingered with the onlookers for days. He said people were retching. It stuck to your clothes and everything, he said.
You know, that would have been great, the Barney parade, if he would have exploded Barney goo all over everybody.
If only Barney was filled with purple goo.
Purple goo.
Like a jelly donut.
Yum.
So the general consensus from everyone involved was that the what went wrong was that not enough dynamite was used.
Oh, so like it didn't.
That's what went wrong. not all kinds of other things.
Okay. Are they thinking like more dynamite would have like chunked it smaller?
Yeah, they're thinking it would have chunked it smaller because
it's my scientific term.
Yeah. I mean, there were such big pieces left over that big like tractors had to come in and they had to like bury it on the beach. Like there are pieces that were like as big as a small whale left. But I think there was problems not only with not having the pieces small enough, but the trajectory seems all wrong. That did not go into the ocean. That went straight up into the air.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe some birds swooped in and ate some sushi on the fly.
But they didn't.
Midair, up high where no one could see.
No, the reporter said like the whole plan was that the seagulls would come in. They said after this happened, like there was no animals in sight.
Well, it could have very well killed them in the air as well.
A little whale shrapnel taking out some gulls.
Shrapnel, yeah.
So when this whale washed ashore, it had been a really long time since the community had experienced a beach whale, so they didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a beach whale?
I've seen the pictures of when this happened.
Oh, you haven't seen a beach whale in real life?
No.
So where I grew up down in California, I saw several. They're very stinky, but fascinating.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think I'd go and explore where I shouldn't.
It was like a big deal. Like my family would drive to the beach to specifically see a dead whale. Cause it's really your only opportunity to see a whale like that up close.
I mean, I've seen them like whale watching alive and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, this, you can like touch them if you want to.
I mean, it's dead, but
poke it.
Is that kind of like the boob jobs too? Like after they're dead, you can poke it. Is that the connection?
Have you ever poked a silicone boob?
I haven't. I've thought about what it might feel like, but I don't know.
I've poked some before when I've had friends get them. Yeah.
Oh, I definitely would. Yeah. If I had the opportunity.
What does that feel like?
What does it feel like? Can you describe it to me? Is it like a whale? Is it a whale blubber?
You know how natural boobs like have a lot of lumps and stuff in there going on? It's not like that. It's like more uniform.
Weird.
So when the dynamite detonated, so this cloud of sand and blood and whale poofed up into the air.
Poof.
And this was a fun family day out, like I mentioned. People are eating picnics.
Their picnic basket.
Yes, it was a lovely day. So reporter for the KTU, Linman, and there was a cameraman filming all this. So they captured this whole thing, and it's the most amazing video, and I'll post it on our Facebook group. It's really incredible to see all this happen. And so there's that moment, like I said, where the people just realize that all that stuff is about to rain down on them. Like they're like, yay, watch it go up. And then it's like, oh shit.
It's a calm before the storm. They know what's going to happen, but their brain isn't processing it quick enough.
Yeah. So one woman can be heard like off the side of the camera saying, here come pieces of whale.
Gross. They didn't. I mean, what did they expect? They thought they were far enough away, I guess, but.
Yeah, and it was supposed to go into the ocean. Like, that was the whole thing. It was going to be blasted into the ocean. And so you can hear these bits, like, landing, like, the sound of these, like, moist bits, chunks, squelching. Yeah, I mean, just think about, like, a bunch of fish, like, giant fish landing everywhere, wet fish.
Okay, this is some cloudy with a chance of meatballs level stuff.
So everyone that was there ended up being covered with small particles of dead, stinky, rotten whale.
Mm.
I mean, what would you have done, Macy, if you'd been there?
Gone home and showered immediately.
I mean, what would have been your thought process, though, sitting and watching that? Like,
I probably would have had a moment of, well, I guess I deserve this.
You would blame yourself somehow.
It's that ridiculous that, like, it must be my fault. I should just own this one and not get too upset about it.
Can you imagine driving home with your stinky whale bit covered selves in the car? I mean, I would probably drive home naked. I would strip down.
Oh yeah, I would.
I would leave my clothes at the scene.
Yep.
I would not take that shit home with me. Mm-mm. No way. So in one of the finest moments, in my opinion, in the history of journalism, Lindman in his news report said, "The blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds."
Wait, can you say that one more time? The blasted
blubber beyond all believable bounds.
Blasted blubber beyond, I'm writing this down, beyond
all believable bounds. I mean, that is just the most amazing
podcast alliteration. Title. That's now the podcast title. It's the blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds. That's
Isn't
great.
That amazing.
What a hero.
No, this guy is my hero for sure. We don't have news journalism like this anymore.
No.
You're allowed to be funny. I mean, now they'd just be like, oh my God, like people could have died. And by the way, nobody died. Nobody got injured. There was a car that got crushed. No one was in it. That's it.
Okay.
I just feel like we've lost that ability somehow to just like make fun of shit that's funny. Like we're not allowed to laugh at stuff.
Yeah. I think there's a general, like, I don't know. Take things seriously. I'm a fairly serious person, but I think you need to be able to laugh at stuff.
Yeah, it's like you have to really censor yourself now and like, oh my gosh, like what will be the consequences of saying this or that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that was more of, I mean, it's the 70s.
Yeah,
the swinging 70s.
I mean, at that time they probably I don't know, maybe because nobody died, so that's
nobody good. Died.
Could you imagine though if he made light of it and someone had died, and then it'd be like he's over here making fun of whale deaths?
Well, he was there, so he knew nobody died.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Whale deaths, death by whale blubber chunks.
Yeah, that would like talk about a way to go. That would suck to have like put that on my tombstone: death by blubber.
I used to always, you know, think, well, I still do, about like like more preferable ways to die than others.
Yeah, yeah.
And I somehow, when I was younger, like teenager, I used to think like dying by a shark attack would be a more preferable way to go.
Why? That's terrifying.
I don't know. I thought it would make me one with the sea, one with the ocean, which I, you know, I grew up by the beach, so I somehow felt like that would be a spiritual reckoning somehow.
A way to go back into the belly of the beast.
Exactly. Circle of life, yo.
Wow. I mean, I think like fire would be the worst.
Fire would be fucking awful.
I would not like that.
We've established fire would be terrible.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, I mean, I don't know. I think all of it would
freezing suck. Would be pretty good. I mean, dying in my sleep, hey, obviously. Number one, I think.
Yeah, yep.
Or aneurysms, like you don't even know, you're just bam. Mm-hmm. That's it, lights out.
Yeah, if I'm like really old and feeble, if a family member wants to, you know, smother me with a pillow, that's fine too. I'm okay with that.
But I'd be like looking with my eyes like, I see you.
I'd be like, I knew this time has come. Way back when the whale blubber fell, I saw it in the sky. My future was writ.
Last year was the 50th anniversary of this event.
Wow, that's a long time.
And so the location there was named Exploding Whale Park. So the people that live in Florence, Oregon, like, they've embraced this.
It's cute.
They get it. And they plan to try to do an annual event where
they explode
all
something?
Things exploding whales are celebrated. I want to go there.
That sounds fun.
I think I've driven through there. I don't think I've stopped.
Where is it again?
Florence, Oregon.
I don't know. I don't think I have.
Because I've driven all like down the whole coast a few times. So next time they have the annual event, I would go there for that. Like that would be
you would
really
do it.
Fun. I would wear my whale hat, dress in a whale blubber dress like Lady Gaga.
Wait, is that look exists somewhere? Can I look that up?
Well, she wore that meat dress that time to some big award ceremony.
I haven't seen it. I'd have to look it up.
Oh, it's a dress like with it's meat, raw meat draped all over it.
Oh, that sounds gross. Okay.
But you could turn that into like, you know, whale blubber.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you've never seen the meat dress?
No, I'm not cool.
Here, I got a picture queued up. I'll show you real quick.
All right.
Because you need to see the meat dress. I mean, it was actual meat, I think. I think it was real meat.
I mean, she's just kind of a poser if it's not real meat, right?
Here, look at this
okay.
Real meat.
Okay.
Real meat.
I'm going to look at your real meat now. Ew.
It says meat dress.
Oh, it looks like prosciutto or something. Because it's kind of thin and meat, like fatty.
Yeah, I mean, it looks real to me. Look, it's got like a little meat boots to match.
Boots?
Meat boots.
Meat boots.
Little meat leotard.
Meat boots.
Meat skirt. Little meat bustier.
Well,
I mean, you only want to wear a meat dress for a short period of time. I feel like this has a short shelf life. You don't want to go to the after party in this. It's going to start to stink, I think.
I feel like those meat boots would feel nice to walk in, all squishy.
you want some opera-ski meat boots?
Meat boots?
You could wear them longer in the snow, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's my topic.
That's great.
Floating whales.
Awesome. So my topic I got while I was I'm reading a book which is very good by now my brain's gonna go blank. Nesbo is his last name. Joe Nesbo. But it's the Harry Hole series. If you like detective books, it's actually quite good. They're I believe Norwegian and then translated over.
Okay. I love detective books.
Oh, you would love this. Why did my background change? That's weird.
Oh, you're exposed. I can see okay. What's behind you.
I know, my other one's gone. Okay, anyways. And so very good books. And I was reading it and there was a part in there where they're going through kind of this murder area that they found. And he talks about the origins of
they call that a crime scene.
Thank you. That's I've drank my whole beer already. The murder area, the area where the murder occurred.
I get you. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Where the meat boots landed. they talked about and called it a deadline. Oh. And he mentioned the origins of the word deadline. And I had never known this at all.
Wait, it's related to crime?
You don't know where it comes from?
No, I've never really considered the meaning of that word. I've just always associated it with time management.
Yeah, so most people
lack
do.
Of or having it.
It's kind of a very modern cultural thing, you know, of like having something due at a certain time, right? Like
yes.
So it's really used a lot. It's used all the time. I've had employers use it. I use it like
I use it all the deadline? Fucking time. Should I not?
You're going to think a little bit differently about this. Oh my God, I love this. I know. And that's why
woke me up, Macy.
I'm going to wake you the F up, put you in some meat boots, see how that feels.
Is meat boots going to be the name of our podcast? I think it should be.
It's written down. I already wrote it. Okay, so that's kind of what we're used to it. The actual first earliest known use of the word deadline in the Oxford English Dictionary is in reference to a fishing line with a weight on it that prevents it from moving.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of the first reference. Yes. Okay, in the 1900s, then it was kind of used in the printing industry as the boundary line for a printing press, the deadline.
Oh, yeah, right? Where you go out of your bounds.
Yeah, yeah. Got exactly. It. Okay. So there was another way that this was used, and this was back during the Civil War at the Andersonville prison.
Oh my God, Andersonville.
Yes.
Why are we coming back to this?
Right? Okay.
This is such a big part of my life when I was in fifth grade. I read that book in fifth grade.
Did cover you? To cover,
and really? It was intense.
So is this kind of weird flashing back to this topic?
Well, it's just, you know, it feels significant for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why.
So significant. So Andersonville Prison was a Confederate prisoner of war camp that was built in 1864 to hold captured Union soldiers. It was commanded by Captain Henry Weirs. The conditions in the prison were known to be really, really bad.
Real bad,
with about 13,000 of the camp's total 45,000 prisoners dying over the time it ran. Like, really bad. The prison lacked enough food and water for even the guards to sustain, let alone the prisoners. So what do you remember from way back in your childhood?
From fifth grade? Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I'm curious, because obviously
I don't remember
a
lot. I mean, okay. It did leave an impact, just, you know, how just bleak and brutal the situation was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's kind of weird looking back that I was obsessed with the Civil War as a fifth grader and Andersonville in particular.
I was really into the Titanic at that age, learning about how it sank and all of the details of it. Yeah.
One day I want to go to a real Civil War place. I've never been to the South other than Florida, which doesn't really count.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I went to the one in Oklahoma, but that was, not great. Are you there still?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, you froze. Okay.
I didn't freeze. I was just holding my face still.
Oh, you were very still. So
I was like pensive.
Yeah, I could see you're waiting for more information. So
I was.
So at this prison, many people had typhoid fever, scurvy, dysentery. The conditions were horrendous. They had no real organization in the prison and how they built it. So they didn't have living facilities or cells. They had to use simple wooden stake fencing. And they use that for 10 to 20 feet high to keep the prisoners in. So it was basically a big fenced area. That keeps people in, but many people, healthy men, could try to climb it. And many people worked as teams to try to climb it as well. And obviously the conditions are so horrible inside that people want to escape for their lives.
It's worth it, even if you die.
Exactly.
So
prison guards are placed on watch positions and given orders to shoot any man attempting to climb the walls. Even this did not always work, as oftentimes they'd get over the walls before people were noticed or able to be targeted. So to give the guards more time to react, Wurz added the so-called deadline.
What is this? Tell me more, Macy.
This was a literal line of wooden planks or fences about 20 feet inside the outer wall. Orders were given to the guards that any man who crossed the deadline, even by a hair, would be shot on sight without warning.
Oh, shit.
The guards were positioned about 90 feet apart along the wall, giving them a good angle to fire on anybody who would go and cross the deadline.
Wow. Why do we not use this in our vernacular now?
I know. Isn't that weird?
Yes.
It's really so weird.
When I tell people to meet a deadline, I'm basically saying
I'm going
to
turn in
your
you.
paperwork or you die.
Yes. And then, I mean, it's not like it's
extreme.
And it's not like it's that hard, but it just taught, I mean, it makes, I don't know, like language. It's literally the word dead in it. And we don't question it.
We
it's
don't just, think about it.
No,
I
it's
never
just
thought
the word.
About it. I feel like I want to smack myself in the head right now.
Like, obviously, dead.
Dead.
Okay,
I should have thought about this. What does this mean?
A deadline.
So it's like a threat against somebody's life every time I'm like,
and
okay,
it's and
our
it's
deadline is EOB Friday.
And it's a specific measurement taken by the system, by the controlling authority to build in a system where they can entrap people who try to leave. So,
oh so it's 20 feet.
Yeah. And like a deadline at work is a system made expectation. And if you don't meet it, there's consequences. Like it literally means the same thing, except
it means
for you don't
exact
get shot.
Same thing.
Yeah. Maybe
but
you don't get shot.
You could get fired, which
yes.
could mean, you know, it's financially detrimental to you and it could feel like a life and death mm-hmm. situation.
So Andersonville Prison was liberated in May 1865, and that's really only when the conditions became more clear. As the prison commander, Wirz received most of the blame, and angry Americans wanted justice for those in the prison. Wirz was tried and charged with war crimes, sentenced to death, and hanged. Despite this, Wirz's responsibility for the prison's despicable state is still questioned overall, though, because really, he wasn't getting food and supplies being sent in. So, like, it was a good way to put the blame on somebody as well as not making it a bigger thing.
And it's South Carolina, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, it also affected his own men. So it's not like, like his own guards weren't able to eat as well. So it's, you know, you would think if there was food, his people would be fat and happy as well. Okay, so regardless, the deadline in Wirz's prison became infamous. The term was used loosely until the 1920s when it began to be, when it started being used more in the US media industry to refer to a time when a writer must complete a story for publication.
How did that shift happen? That's so interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, it just kind of loosely got used. I mean,
how
I
is
think
it like it actual got life and death to a work situation?
Well, and I think because it was so infamous, the deadline, people, it was in their brains, and then at some, and people were using it loosely, and then all of a sudden somebody is like, oh yeah, this deadline that got put in front of me, and then it got picked up. Somebody picked it up. The US
I'm
media.
I'm never
apparently.
Using this word at work again.
I know. It sounds so tragic.
What can we replace it with?
Due date.
Due date.
It's a dated to do. There's yes. no death in it at all, actually.
Let's take the death out of work, please.
So, I mean, some may argue that, you know, this kind of goes back to the humor part of, you know, do you change things or do you just laugh it off? But I think that it's worth considering how work is already stressful for so many
yes.
people.
Yes, yes, yes.
Just like, so I worked at a place before where, and working in mental health, there was a suicide and they did a death review. And it's like, okay, how can we help the person feel supported that like we're here to help them get through this grief and loss and not just like, we're going to review the death and what you did wrong.
To make sure, yeah, you didn't miss any steps and we're not liable.
Yeah, people are already worried that they're being scrutinized endlessly. So let's
exactly.
not hold them to a deadline.
God, let's not use that word anymore.
Let's give them a due date.
Well, I mean, the fact that we're using something associated with life and death mm-hmm. for a work situation, I think speaks like at a deeper level to the problems with today's work ethic that
yeah.
is based on values that and roots that may not be our own, but we're held to it. You
yeah,
know,
like
this 5-day work week, like where yeah. did that even come from?
Yeah, this should
is
be
it still as, valid?
As important to you. You know, this should be more important to you than your family. Wait, really? Why? That's actually probably not true.
That's not true. Yes. You know, family comes first. Safety comes first. At least for me.
Yeah. And that's where I think, you know, generationally, even culturally, like, where are these things we're picking up? Like, we need to question why and continue to reassess.
Yes. So there's a, in social media movement, there's a hashtag called Rest is Resistance. And this, to my understanding, was started by a Black lady. And it was all about how her people with roots in slavery, where you didn't have a choice but to work,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, they became indoctrinated into, well, you're Black, you know, you need to work twice as hard to prove yourself, and how that's manifested into a lot of well-being issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so the act of just rest in itself is a resistance statement. Mm-hmm. But what has happened is that hashtag has been picked up by a lot of white people. I see that because I followed the hashtag,
mm-hmm.
and it's used by like a white, you know, young hot chick doing yoga on the beach. Rest is resistance. And so the founder of this movement has really spoken out, like, that is not, like, now you're appropriating a movement that has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. Like, you have never had the experience of not having the opportunity to rest for so many reasons, generational reasons, mm-hmm. of historical trauma and oppression. And so I just want to say that if you're using that hashtag rest is resistance and you know who you are, if you shouldn't be using it, quit it.
Stop it. Stop.
If you're sitting in Starbucks trying to take a selfie of you reading a book and you want to hashtag it rest is resistance, think about whether that's your hashtag to use or not.
Next time you want to tell your employees about a deadline, think about, are you going to really threaten their life?
I'm never using it again. I'm seriously not going to. It's going to be like when I got rid of the word guys in my vocabulary.
Hey, guys.
Like, because so many people were so offended by that. I'm like, yeah. I'm not saying it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really good. I think I've slipped up a couple times, but overall, I mean, it's habits. We can change our habits if we put some intention to it.
Well,
understand the impact.
A habit since the Civil War.
I'm horrified.
It gets used all the time.
I used that word probably yesterday, I think, at work.
Got to make sure to have it in by the deadline.
Yes, I think one of my staff was like, when do you want this in? And I'm like, how about we set the deadline at end of day Friday? I swear to God, I said that yesterday.
How about if you miss this by a hair, I shoot you.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying.
Because I'm forcing you to be in unworkable conditions and you're in a horrible, you're starving, have dysentery, and I'm going to shoot you.
I hate how disconnected we get from our past. Like, we have to stay connected to history. Like, I think constant history lessons should be a part of everybody's life. I love that.
That's basically what we're doing. Is like,
oh my God, are we doing it? You mean us? We're doing this?
Well, that's literally what we do, is we find something that's
meaningful.
Well, I mean, not always, but like
exploding whales is meaningful, Macy.
I know you did that one topic though.
Are we bringing up, we're bringing that up again. The Bellywhack monster.
Yeah.
I have apologized profusely and it will never happen again.
I didn't feel educated on that day, but you know, we step into things. Like, again, I love how organic it can be. I had no idea for a topic until yesterday when I was reading, and I learned something new, and that was exciting, and then I explored it more, and then I get to share it, so it's fun.
I know, it's super fun. I love picking a topic that I've wanted to know more about, but like the mm-hmm. podcast gives me like a reason to actually do some research.
Yeah, I hope it like inspires other people too to, I mean, even if you don't do your own research on stuff, because life gets busy, but like, I don't know, listen to ours and, you know, question if you want to say deadline as much, or go watch a whale get blown up. You know, spice
yeah,
it up.
You choose.
Yeah. All right. Well, the book that I'm reading, it's called The Snowman, Harry Hole series. Really great. You should read
What's
it.
What's the book about again?
By Joe Nesbo. Well, it's like he's a like a murder investigator. Very like psychological murder mystery.
Okay.
Very good. Very
you
well
recommend
written.
It.
Yeah, I've read every Joe Nesbo book and they're very good.
Are they all murder mysteries?
Yeah, and the Harry Hole series. So Harry
Why have you
Hole
not recommended this to me? You know I love murder mysteries.
I have them all too. I'm looking at them on the shelf and I'm like, they're just sitting there. You can I'm gonna bring you some and you can read them.
I am currently reading, since now we're talking about that.
Yes.
A Harlem Shuffle by Colson Whitehead. It's my second Colson Whitehead book. The first book I read was called The Underground Railroad, and it fucked with my head because he puts his own fictionalized twist on the Underground Railroad, where it's an actual railroad.
Oh.
And that actual Underground Railroad, like with trains and tracks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I honest to God had to stop and set it down and say, was I not paying attention in class? Like, I always thought that was like, you know, a metaphor. Like, was it an actual Underground Railroad? And I looked it up and no, it's not. That was what he created. But it kind of messed with my head. And so now I'm reading the second book, which is better, I think, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I'm like my trust is a little bit blown as far as historical fiction truth.
Yeah,
that's not an oxymoron. Like when he describes stuff, I'm like, well, is that really what happened, or is that like?
I mean, maybe that's kind of
a different version.
His point is to make you know, to widen perspective.
But I love like really good historical fiction where you learn about that time through the story of some, you know, fictional characters. I love that.
I mean, what you're talking about almost bleeds sci-fi a bit, like where it's, you know, fictional. I mean,
but I chose that book called Underground Railroad because it's like, wow, I'd really like to learn more about that. You know, I mean, I feel like it was like a section of a chapter in a history book when I went to school. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd love to dive into that. And then it was like this whole like different take on it. And now I feel like I have trust issues with Colson Whitehead.
Well, you'll love Joe Nesbo because it's exciting. It's a fun ride for sure.
I'm totally going to check it out immediately. I finish the book I'm reading right now.
I'll bring them to you. I have enough. So you can have it.
Are you going to want it back? Because I have problems with that. I don't like it when people give me an actual book and want it back. Because I feel like that's too much pressure and responsibility on me. And I could ruin the book. And then I feel like a terrible person.
If I give it to you as a gift, I'll feel better about it. So I'll wrap it.
Like either I keep it.
You can keep it.
Or I don't want it.
Yeah, you can keep it. I'll give you. So I'll finish the one I'm reading and then I'll give you that one. Cause that one is like a standalone.
I mean, do you remember when you loaned me that one book a long time ago?
I know. That's why.
And I had so much pressure.
Haruki Murakami.
I didn't even read it because I'm so like, good. I'm going to ruin it. I'm going to crack a page.
I know. You told me you
Something
were going to like
gonna happen.
Read in the bath with it. And I was like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh God, I'm just not even going to, I'm just going to leave it in a bag.
I'm a book snob. Yeah, no. Anyways, we can sort out book dealings later. All right. Until next time.
Bring your umbrella to any whale exploding event.
And always remember that the blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds from the belly of the beast.
It's hard to say. You did it!
Yes. All right. Bye.